Jones Jr., and he got behind the corner and all the way to the 38-yard line on the final play of the opening quarter. Lions knocking on the door at the 21-yard line. They lay it off for Darren Fells, already his fourth reception of this game. And there's Abdullah. Boy, he cuts on a dime and nearly broke that one were it not for Sendejo. 45, and Keenum is sacked all the way back at his own 45-yard line by Settle. First down, they give it to Dalvin Cook, and he puts the ball on the ground, the first time he's fumbled it all year long. The Lions have it. Zach Center, they play fake it to him, and thrown and caught inside the 5-yard line, and that is a rookie tight end out of Toledo. Abdullah looking for a seam, and did he get into the end zone? It looked like he did. Rolling right, finding T.J. Jones, and that is a successful 2-point conversion try. But excellent field position from their own 44 down the middle, and that is Thielen. And he loses the ball, and that'll be a turnover. And for all intents and purposes, that's the old ball game. And that ball punched out of there from behind by who else? The Pro Bowl safety, Glover Quinn. A 14-7 win for the Lions to go to 3-1, tied with Green Bay atop the NFC North.
I would not say it was bold. I would say that when you have pass rushers that you face like that one, you better spend some time running the ball because they can create some problems for you. So that was one of the things that we wanted to make certain we did, is see if we can find some cracks in that defense. And it's a tough defense. I mean, they're very, very good in every single phase. I mean, their numbers indicate that. You know, our guys, you know, played extremely well, and our defense played pretty well today too. It's one game, but the guys play hard. We've been playing good defense, except for, you know, we had a little sort of a hiccup in the last ball game a little bit, but other than that, our guys have been hanging in there, doing a good job. But we've been taking the ball away. I think that's one of the things that made a tremendous difference there, that we were able to cause some havoc there with our guys, you know, knocking the ball loose, and that made a big difference in the game.
Tough NFC North battle, man. Our defense played outstanding. Our guys getting turnovers. Guys on our team doing a great job of not turning it over. I mean, I had a couple today that were close, and shoot, Zach going and jumping on that ball that was ended up being a fumble was a huge play. So just a lot of big plays that probably don't show up on the stat sheet.
We got beat pretty soundly in every phase. That's obvious. But like I told our team, you know, that's the first quarter of the season. That's not how we want to play or how we're going to continue to play. We understand we got some work to do. Nobody's going to drop their head or get mad. I mean, the only people that can fix this is the people in that room. We got work to do. We understand it. Give credit to Cincinnati. They played well. And we didn't. We got to continue to get better. We need to get better faster. The disappointing part is that was as bad as we played all year.
You know, in order to be successful in this league, once again, it takes all 11 guys on one side of the ball, you know, working together to execute their job properly, and we weren't able to do that all across the board from the first night. We have a team who will continue to fight, and you can see that in that last drive there, and I wanted to be a part of that. It was best for me at the time to avoid some late hits at the end of that and try to preserve the, you know, health of myself moving forward.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Yes, you heard the man where we are, Toledo's sports leader. And, Kush, I got to start with one of these for the hometown Honolulu Blue Boys. My goodness gracious.
Can you dig it?
You know, there's a big, big part of me. You know, it's funny, Jim, because during most of the baseball season, we have led our baseball coverage and conversation on this program, Kush, with Indians instead of Tigers, with the obvious reason. In the last season, too, last year and this year, for the obvious of reasons. They're winning. The most obvious of reasons, they're winning. They're champions of their division. They're going to the playoffs. They're winning the World Series, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they deserve top billing and top conversation time on the program. And when it comes to football now, it's very, very clear that the winning Detroit Lions, who are 3-1 on this season, deserve top billing. But in this case, I can honestly say I don't even want to talk about the Browns at all. Not second billing or third billing or anything else. I just kind of want to, you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
It's just so laughable. It is so embarrassing. They don't deserve our time. They don't deserve our attention. And I know there might be Browns fans who are fuming right now going, you know, it's bull crap. But, I mean, at what point At what point does one arrive at the inevitable conclusion that this franchise, this iteration of the Browns franchise in its long and storied history, and I'm talking about this iteration beginning in 1999 and continuing now through 2017, is the single most inept, unevolved, untalented, unskilled, ridiculous joke of a franchise in all of pro sports, all team sports, NBA, MLB, NHL, all included. I probably could throw MLS in, but I couldn't name an MLS team, let alone which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones.
But I feel safe in saying most of those franchises are probably better off than the Browns are. Yeah,
I would probably say that most of the WNBA franchises are better off as well. I mean, it is just such an embarrassment, such a joke. They don't deserve our time. Now, I'll give them
some
later.
Can you believe they're a favorite, by the way, next week?
What's that?
Can you believe they're actually a favorite again next week? That's ridiculous.
How?
I don't know.
Why? Who are they playing? Are they playing Louisiana Tech?
The Jets.
But the Jets have won two straight games.
I know.
Somebody explain that to me. I don't understand that. I legitimately do not understand that. The New York Jets have won two straight games by my count. They are 2-2. The New York Jets are in second place in their division. They have beaten the Dolphins 20-6 and the Jaguars 23-20 in back-to-back weeks. And the Jaguars, by the way, are a team that pummeled the Baltimore Ravens 44-6 or 7 or whatever it was.
Right.
Just a week before in London. How could the Jets possibly, and I know it's just the home game thing, I suppose, right?
Point
it's
and a half right
that,
now.
Yeah, okay, and that's just they give you that because you're at home. But still, I would... Cush, Central Catholic hosting the Cleveland Browns right now, I will take the Irish and lay the points. Okay? I will do that. I'm just telling you. Oklahoma and the Cleveland Browns right now, I might lay. I'm getting a little more on board with that.
I can't do it for high school. There's just too much difference in size. But Oklahoma, now you're talking.
I mean, honestly, it's such an absolute joke. I mean, they were favorites on the road. What a joke of a line that was against Indianapolis. Remember what we talked about and they talked about. And by the way, here I am giving them top billing when I said I wouldn't because I don't want to.
We're venting. We got to get it off our chest.
I guess that's it. But when they were favored going into Indy, we talked about what a ridiculous notion that was, even without Andrew Luck playing. And sure enough, they went out there and laid that egg. Huge first half for T.Y. Hilton and Jacoby Brissett. Just a monster offensive day by them. The Browns defense completely no-showed, and it was a loss. But remember, that was the first of a three-game stretch that all Browns analysts and supporters and friends and allies and even non-supporters, but those who just analyze this stuff, all said this is a three-game stretch. This is where they turn it around. This is where they really kind of get a little bit of momentum and break the losing skid and all that stuff. You know, 1-15 last year, this is when they start to make a little bit of progress between the Indianapolis, Cincinnati, and Jets games. That this three-game stretch is where it's going to happen. This three-game stretch is where it has to happen, essentially, is kind of what we were told. Because after that, of course, you've got the much-improved Houston Texans, and we'll talk about Deshaun Watson's career day in his young life coming up. Then the Titans, also better. Then the Vikings, also better. Then the Lions, also better. Then the Jaguars, as proven, also better. This is a three-game stretch that was critical. Scott Petrak told us that prior to the Indy game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are now 0-2 in that three-game stretch. And in the second one, as we just pointed out, blown out. Blown out of the building. Blown out of the factory of sadness and booed off the field at halftime. This is what I'm told anyway because I didn't watch him. I won't watch him. I'm not going to subject myself to it or any of the idiots with their fists in the air or any of that other nonsense that goes along with it right now. I will look at it, look at the highlights. I will study the box scores, and I will get the analysis that I need, but I'm not going to watch them live. They don't deserve it. But booed off of the field at halftime, I'm told, and I don't know, were they booed off of the field at the end of the game after a 31-7 loss to a winless team that looked like they might not be able to beat Alabama? Talking about the Bengals until yesterday. And now, of course, they have the Jets, winners of two straight, gaining confidence by the day, and who I promise you, I will not be Joe Namath and guarantee victory a la 1969, but I will tell you, I'm pretty damn close to guaranteeing victory for the Jets over this Clowns franchise, which has a horrific ownership group or team of Jimmy and D. Haslam, absolutely beyond salvation as owners in so many ways. They have an even worse front office. Hey, I got an idea. Let's go hire a lawyer and a baseball scout and put him in charge of our football front office. Who does that? Sashi Brown had never even been a player personnel intern, let alone director, let alone general manager. And we're going to name him the director of football operations with the final say on all roster decisions. A lawyer. And to support him, we'll hire a baseball scout who's really, really does some crazy stuff with this computer, man. You wouldn't believe the kind of little metrics he's been able to come up with here.
I know, that's how they got Osweiler. Wasn't that awesome? Oh, wait.
So the ownership is horrible. The front office is horrible. The coaching staff, Hugh Jackson, supposed to be the QB whisperer. Terrible. One win in how many games now? 19? Right? Wait a minute, 20. 20. So you're talking about a horrific coaching staff. You're talking about an extraordinarily under-talented roster, given the amount of first and second round picks that they'd managed to negotiate and trade their way through over the last two or three years. All of those first round picks wasted on guys who can't friggin' play. You got the worst receiving core in the league. You got a bargain basement offensive line. You got an untalented defense. And we're... it is just an embarrassing joke. Anybody who puts on a CLE shirt or hat that's orange, and I'm not talking about the ones that you might wear CLE for the Cavaliers or the AL Central champion Indians who started in the playoffs on Thursday, but if you're doing anything Browns-related, honestly, I question your sanity. I question your mental acuity. It's really, really, really bad.
No, it absolutely is. And unlike you, here's the one small part where I differ. I don't even need this anthem nonsense to have an excuse to not watch the Browns. I just don't. And for the second straight year, I'm so glad the Indians are in the playoffs. This is my personal fan point coming out right now. So glad the Indians are in the playoffs. Because now I don't have to wait till World Series. They just have to get to the ALCS, and then we could start in on the circus that will be, most likely, LeBron's final season in Cleveland, because, of course, the NBA season is moved up about a week and a half from where it used to be, and I could bypass, as a fan, the Browns for a whole season again.
I am with you. I can bypass them and will bypass them, save for the work that I will need to do to conduct this talk show. And that's it.
Pretty much
that's
where
all
I'm at, too.
No, I mean, I legitimately now see, think about what this says, Jim. What does this say about a franchise when they have managed to turn at least two, you and me, in the broadcasting industry, turn us into people who no longer enjoy their jobs? Our jobs include watching these games. Watching the Browns, watching the Lions, watching the Wolverines, watching the Buckeyes, watching the Rockets, watching the Falcons, and on down the line, the Tigers, the Indians, and away we go. It's our job. And you know what it is for most guys like you and me? It's a dream job. Holy cow, we get paid to watch these games, listen to the players, look at the coaches, analyze the stats, and then talk about them on the radio. It's a pretty damn nice gig. Very, very proud and happy and humbled to have been doing this for the last 20 years. The Cleveland Browns have managed to take me and turn me in from a guy who likes his job into a guy who does it only because he has to, because it's the job. I no longer enjoy it. I can't derive any pleasure from it. Any touchdown that is scored doesn't get a fist pump in the air from me. It gets a, how will they screw it up now? They'll give up a touchdown on the kick return. Or they'll fumble the next time and have one run in, or whatever happens good will be undone by something twice as bad. There's no enjoyment at all. So for me, and then you add to it all of this social trash that continues to go on over politics and hatred of the cops and the accusation that America is a racist country with racist police officers, lest you not forget. That's what Colin Kaepernick started all of this with, by the way, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. Wish I didn't have to, but I will. So you know, with all of those things being said, I will only pay attention to that joke of a franchise that I simply cannot stand the sight of because it's my job. They've turned it from a joy and a passion, Jim, to a job requirement. It's kind of like being assigned if you work. I don't know if I can make a really good analogy here. I'm trying to think of what's a really good job in the plant at Chrysler Jeep. But you know, the job that the 25-year vet who's like in charge of the union gets versus the new hire who's coming in at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, I feel like I had the former and now I have the latter. I've been reassigned. I got the crap. Or the new guy who has to work third shift, you know, emptying dumpsters or something stupid. I can't make a very good comparison here because it's just impossible to understand. But I went from enjoying the job to now it just being a job requirement that I have to do.
Yeah, and I kind of hear you. And that's what bums me out about the whole thing. But at the same time, I am so glad that we are here in this market in Toledo because it's not just one of those. Like, I can't imagine being on Cleveland type radio and having to talk about these guys, you know, as all the time.
That's a fair point. We at least have other teams that we can discuss.
Bingo, you're exactly right. One of them is a good football team.
Yeah, although out there, I'm sure what they're doing is probably just focusing on the Indians and just not even having anything to do with this, which, you know, they're starting the playoffs, and we're going to do too. To a large extent, we are going to focus on the American League playoffs and the series that the Indians will have, the showdown that they will have with the winner of the Yankees and Twins wild card game. Again, their play-in game. I don't want to get into the debate about playoffs versus play-in, but anyway, so we will do that too to distract ourselves. And, of course, we have the Lions who are winning 3-1 now, and that's what I do want to focus on. And coming up here in a few, at about 3:35, we're going to talk to Jeremy Reisman, our man from PrideOfDetroit.com, I think, right? Jeremy's Pride of Detroit.
That is correct.
Yeah, Jeremy's our good guy, because Chris Lemieux also works with Pride of Detroit. But Jeremy from PrideOfDetroit.com will talk to us a little bit about the win that moved the Alliance to 3-0. It was not pretty. It was not dominant in any fashion. I think we can all agree on that. A 14-7 win over the Vikings, but you know what else it was? It was a division win. It was a win, for a battle for first place, essentially, in the AFC North right now with the Packers, because the Lions are 3-1. The Packers are 3-1. Had Minnesota won, they would be 3-1. The Lions came back at 2-2. So it was all of those things in terms of importance, even if it was not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing thing you've ever seen. So Jeremy will break down to us what the Lions are doing with that vicious, aggressive defense that is now kind of are they reshaping, are they rebranding, if you will, Detroit Lions football from high-flying Matthew Stafford, jacking it down the field to the likes of Calvin Johnson. I know he's been gone for 2 years now, but second season now, but you understand the point, to a very, very different type of team that is running.
Yep.
I do that. I don't know why I always shift into Forrest Gump mode when I do that. Running the football with Amir Abdullah the way they did yesterday and playing defense. Matthew Stafford, 19 of 31 for 209 in a win. How many weeks are we going to say that?
Yep.
They ran the ball for more yards a couple weeks ago. They ran for more yards than they passed for and won. We said that'll never happen again. Now they didn't run for as many as they passed for. It's pretty dang close, though. But they're running the hell out of the football. He's throwing for 200 yards, not putting anywhere near the numbers up that the NFL's highest-paid quarterback ever should be putting up. But it's working because they are no longer that team. They are no longer the team that's going to have to outscore you because they know the defense can't stop anybody. So far, in just 4 weeks, we're not saying this makes a season, but it is a defensive-oriented or identified football team. And that is a great thing to see, and we're going to talk about it, again, coming up with our man Jeremy Reisman right after the Bottom of the Hour Sports Center. And before we do the Bottom of the Hour Sports Center, what do you say we get wild? Kush.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
And the Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day, will Tyler Olson make the Indians' 25-man postseason roster? Well, the Indians' rookie lefty reliever completed his season with 20 innings pitched, over 30 appearances, and he finished the season with an ERA of 0.00. That is the most innings pitched with an ERA of zero since, are you ready for this? Carl Spooner had a 0.00 across 18 innings for the 1954 Brooklyn Dodgers. How about that one? Tyler Olson with the Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Okay, coming up. We're going to talk, we're going to get a sports center. Then we're going to talk a little Lions with Jeremy Reisman of PrideOfDetroit.com. In the next hour, we will talk more about the Clown franchise with our friend Scott Petrak. Also coming up at about 4:20, your next chance to qualify for the European vacation. That's right, one of six European destinations that you choose to fly from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina, to if you are the grand prize winner. The drawing to be held on October 9th. It will run out this Friday. Will be the last day of drawing those qualifiers. So if you want to be it, be listening for the cue to call at about 4:20, somewhere between 4:20 and 4:30 this afternoon. So we've got you covered six ways from Sunday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll onward on the Extravaganza, talking more football this hour. And you know where a great place to watch your football is? If it's not in the comfort of your own house in your own easy chair, you want to get yourself out to B-Dubs. That's where, because that's where football heaven is. And they've gone above and beyond this season. They have countless taps and HD screens all over the place, as you know. But the entire place is committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football, food and drinks included, including the classic menu item in the 35th Weck sandwich that is out, and also the limited time only Blue Moon barbecue sauce. You got to check it out. There's more, but you got to come in to find out what it is, to the place with the very best football experience, Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. All right. You have to be drinking, by the way, a lot if you're watching the Cleveland Browns and you want to survive it. But not so much with the Detroit Lions, who moved to 3-1, tied for first place in the NFC North with a division win, albeit a rather ugly one, over the Minnesota Vikings yesterday. And joining us now to break it down is our man, Jeremy Reisman from PrideOfDetroit.com. Hey, Jeremy, good to have you back already. What's going on?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me again. I'm glad to be back.
Well, you know, it's so much fun to talk about, wow, look at all of the things that are going right for the Lions, as opposed to, you know, far too often it's, all right, let's do a postmortem on the latest shootout loss. And that's where I want to start, Jeremy. This team has had two wins now out of its three that I would never have said prior to the season that they would have. A game in which, you know, Matthew Stafford only throws for 209 yards and a touchdown. Chances are they're probably not going to win. Another game in which the running game actually produced more yards than the passing game, they're probably not going to win. But neither one of those things are true. They did win both of those games, and it's because they seem to have become a bit of a defensive force, at least through four games in the season. Is their identity changing from an offensive team that's going to have to outscore the opponent because the defense can't stop anyone consistently, to a defensive-minded monster in the NFC North?
In a way, I think the answer is yes. I mean, a lot of people are debating today whether this defense is for real or whether they're kind of the beneficiary of all these turnovers that they've created. I think they have 10 now through four games, which is a pretty high number for any team. But at the same time, this defense is also much more of a ball hawking defense. The secondary especially is getting their hands on so many more passes. You just look to last year when Case Keenum was with the Rams. I think he completed somewhere near 80% of his passes when he was with the Rams. You know, they were a pretty bad offense last year. Totally different offense this year. But last night with the Vikings, Case Keenum only completed about 52% of his passes. So it isn't really just about the turnovers. This secondary is really stopping teams' passing game, and the offense has been able to get by kind of on their slow starts just because this defense has been so good.
Jeremy Reisman joining us, breaking down the Lions' win yesterday, 14-7 over the Minnesota Vikings. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Then, you know, the place where normally we see fireworks, we see a lot of really, really big numbers next to the name Matthew Stafford. It's why he just became the NFL's highest paid player ever, at least until the next star quarterback gets his contract up for renegotiation. So we're normally used to seeing that, and yesterday we saw what a lot of people haven't seen in a long time, and that's a running game. Ameer Abdullah really kind of dominating both in yardage and production and helping the offense dominate in time of possession. I mean, dare I say, is it a ball control offense now in Detroit?
I wouldn't go that far. It was definitely a ball control game for the Lions, and I think that makes a lot of sense. The Vikings have kind of always had the Lions' number in the passing game. I think Stafford's averaging somewhere around 220 yards passing against the Vikings over the past 3 or 4 years. So this was actually a pretty average performance for him against Minnesota. The rushing game, however, that was definitely an anomaly, something I personally wasn't expecting at all. And Abdullah had a lot to do with that. I don't think the offensive line was blocking for him that well, but he was making a lot of people miss in the backfield, turning a lot of negative yard plays into potentially 4 or 5 6-yard games, and you know, this is a Vikings defense whose longest run they had given up was 11 yards coming into the game. Abdullah, yeah, I think it was in the first quarter, he had that 29-yard run. So this was a great single performance by the Lions running game, but this is still definitely an offense predicated on the arm of Matthew Stafford, and I think you're going to see that once they start facing some poorer defense. The Lions offense has really gone through a ringer of great pass defenses through these first 4 weeks, and they have a couple more coming up in the next 2 weeks. But I think once they hit that bye week, you're really going to see Matthew Stafford hit that stride, and suddenly the Lions offense is going to open up a little more.
We're talking to Jeremy Reisman of PrideOfDetroit.com about the Lions' big win, big being a relative term in that it was for first place right now, as one quarter of the season is in the books. Jim Cushion's got a question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, and the phrase that keeps coming to my mind, and Bob, I hadn't had a chance to mention this yet in that first segment, complete football team. This team to me seems like a much more complete overall football team than it has even just last year when they made the playoffs. It's not just the passing game. You know, we're talking about Abdul. There was a few moments towards the end of that game I was positive we were going to finally see a 100-yard individual Lion rusher. But then you get the defensive side story of this game, and there have been defensive good stories throughout these first four games of the Lions. They forced three more turnovers, all of them fumbles, but some of them helping lead to points in this game. How off base or close to it am I when I say this is a much more complete football team than we've seen out of the Lions in a little while?
I think you're right. I think you're spot on, especially on defense, because we're talking last year, maybe the Lions had one or two playmakers. You know, Ezekiel Ansah, not his best year last year, but he's still creating pressure. Darius Slay, Clover Quinn. Those are the only names you're really saying last year. This year, you can add Miles Killebrew, who I thought had an excellent game last night. You can add Tavon Wilson in run support. Haven't even mentioned, Anthony Zettel, who had 2 sacks, leads the team in sacks now. He's having an outstanding year. This defense has so many different guys who can make the opposing team hurt. And you saw that, especially since they had been down 2-3 linebackers in that game and still managed to hold the Vikings to only, I think it was like 80 some yards rushing that game. And that's a good running team. So I think it's definitely a more full team on defense. And we've already, you know, seen plenty of playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. So yeah, I would say this is definitely the most complete team this team has sported since at least 2014 when they had that really good defense sported, by Ndamukong Suh. But, definitely a more complete team than the last year's team that made the playoffs.
You know, normally you like to give 24 hours to enjoy the last victory before you look ahead, and I think it's pretty close to 24 hours right now. Game ended yesterday a little after 4, so we're going to call it and look ahead to next week. The Panthers come into Ford Field next Sunday, and my oh my, what a very different type of challenge this looks like now that Cam Newton had a career day, looked like the MVP of 2 years ago, completing 75% of his passes in a showdown with Tom Brady and beating up, a New England defense that isn't very New England-y right now, because
right,
virtually every quarterback they faced through the first 4 weeks has put up big numbers against them. But nonetheless, Cam Newton and the Panthers look very, very good. What do you see moving ahead? This is the time when they're really going to have to get that offense fully on track again. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't had a chance to watch that game between the Panthers and Patriots. I was actually at the Lions game in Minnesota yesterday. So I haven't, I'm still kind of catching up on everything that happened, but that was definitely one of the scores that popped out. And, you know, a lot of people were down on the Panthers after they lost to the Saints the previous week.
Yeah,
they were blown out. Yeah, they were blown out by the Saints. So a lot of people were counting them out in that division right away. But that is a huge comeback game. And, yeah, I mean, you can say what you want about the Patriots defense, but that's going to be a playoff team come January. So anytime you can beat a playoff team on the road like that, definitely a big win. And like you said, Cam Newton's numbers were outstanding. So I think he's more an MVP type player than he was last year. I think he's closer to who he was in 2015 than he was in 2016. So that's going to be a threat for the Lions defense. And, you know, the Lions have made some really good quarterbacks make a lot of mistakes through 4 weeks. They're going to have to do it again next week if they're going to, you know, move to 4-1.
I know it's not generally wise to look ahead a few weeks, but I'm just, you know, I'm looking at the division, and you got 2-3-1 teams at the top of it now. And of course, it would be the Packers and the Lions naturally, and you got three more weeks before you have them. You got Panthers, Saints, and Steelers, and then Packers. But just based on what you've seen through the first quarter of the season, four games out of 16 from Green Bay, and from the first quarter of the season you've seen out of the Lions, how do you see those two teams matching up? And again, I know a lot of things can change in the next 3 weeks, and very likely will. Tough games between the Panthers and the Steelers, by the way, for the Lions to deal with, wrapped around the Saints, which I don't see quite as threatening. But just looking at it from what you can see now through four games, how do those two teams stack up?
I think they're very, very evenly matched. I think they're almost replicas of each other, to be honest. I think the one place where the Lions could potentially have the advantage in that matchup is when they're passing the ball. I think the Green Bay secondary is a little suspect. They're relying on two second-round rookies there in their secondary, and that would probably be the worst pass defense they've faced so far. So, you know, I talked earlier about Matthew Stafford potentially turning things around. I think that's a game that you could circle it. Maybe that happens, although New Orleans defense also pretty limited in their ability to stop the pass. So I think the Lions are right there with the Packers. Obviously, winning in Lambeau is always going to be tough. I believe that's a primetime game as well, so that's going to make the degree of difficulty a little larger. But at this point, I think these teams are 1A, 1B, and you could make an argument for either one being better than the other right now.
Jeremy Reisman is our guest. We're talking Lions football, 3-1 now, atop the tied for the top spot in the NFC North with the Packers, as we just mentioned. Jim's got another one for you. Jimmy Cushing.
You know, going a little off the reservation a little bit on this one, Jeremy. Late the week before, so right before the Falcons game, we learned that there really was an extension given to head coach Jim Caldwell. Nobody's really wanting to give much on that. Like, when exactly this happened? Because it didn't happen the week of the Falcons game. It apparently happened earlier. Can you shed any light on this particular story?
I wish I could. I mean, we know that Jim Caldwell's a very secretive guy, and there were kind of rumors floating around during the owners' meetings in the offseason that a deal might have been done just because he was acting a little weird when it came to talk about his extension. He told the media outright a couple weeks ago that if he had an extension, he wasn't going to tell anybody. But, I mean, it's clear that Bob Quinn, the general manager, is completely in his corner, and this is the first time we actually have written proof, but he's been talking the talk ever since he came here that he thought he was a very good mix with what he favors in a football team. So, I mean, I guess I know Jim Caldwell rubs a lot of people the wrong way just for his calm demeanor, but he has this team winning. He has one of the best records in Detroit Lions history for a coach, and Bob Quinn noticed that and then rewarded it.
Jeremy, last thing I want to ask you about here, and we really appreciate your time, and this is just one of those amazing stories. Now, you said you were up there in Minnesota, right?
Yes.
So post-game, I don't know exactly when they let the media in, if it's before or after the presentation of the game ball, but I want to ask you if you did experience any of it at all, what it was like there. Steve Longa, for those who don't know, and I think everybody kind of does by now, he played a career-high 12 snaps on defense in this game, finishing with four tackles. Two on defense and two on special teams, and he was presented with the game ball. after losing his father in a terrible, terrible accident on Thursday. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the media isn't privy to that part of the locker room celebration and that moment that was caught on video by the Detroit Lions team. If you haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend going to DetroitLions.com. Definitely a really heartfelt moment, really emotional moment. Definitely even made more special by the fact that Haloti Ngata was the guy that offered him the game ball. He himself has lost both of his parents at an early age. Just really a fantastic moment of team unity. It just goes to show you, you know, we hear the talk about about NFL players saying how they're like a family. You know, we've seen them lock arms for the last 2 weeks. This was like real proof of how football is family for a lot of these people, and it's just a great moment to see in Lions history.
Yeah, that is a very, very different type of situation, obviously, and just wanted to see if you had any opportunity to speak to it, because obviously all of our condolences go out to Steve and the rest of his family for the loss. Jeremy, great analysis as always. What an amazing thing. It seems like every time we do talk about the Lions, it's something different than what we have seen before. You know, the shootout win, the 35 points that they put up in week one seem to be more, you know, against the Cardinals, what we're going to see. And boy, just some very, very different types of wins, running the ball more than passing it in some cases, playing ferocious defense. 11 turnovers, as you point out, 11 takeaways in four games is a pretty doggone good average. You're probably not going to get those all the time. You have to wait and see now if they can find a way to stop teams without that good fortune and those takeaways. And Jeremy, we'll be talking to you about it as the season goes on. Anytime you're available, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Anytime, fellas.
Thanks very much. Jeremy Reisman joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, talking about the Lions' 3-1 start. A couple of other quickies that we should do before top of the hour. And by the way, during the top of the hour, we will have a sports center for you. Then we're going to shift gears and talk about the Clowns. And I don't know if I'm ever going to call them a Browns again, Jim, until they get a win. Because they are like the Clowns. You know, they're scarier than, oh, crap, what was the clown's name? What's the clown in
Pennywise
the movie?
Pennywise is who you're thinking of, isn't it?
What is it?
Pennywise.
Pennywise. That's it. Yeah. Did you see it?
No, I have not seen the new one, but I really want to.
Yeah, my wife and I saw it. It's you know, I don't know. It is what it is. I'm not going to criticize it.
I'll be nitpicking the differences between the original from like 20 years ago,
right,
or whenever that was. I'll be nitpicking it, so I'll probably ruin it for my wife.
It's a very interesting movie. Anyway, he's the scary clown. The Cleveland Clowns are scarier. They are scarier, honestly. They are much, much more frightening to look at than anything Pennywise did in that movie. I think I can say that. Scott Petrak will join us to talk about that coming up at about 4:10. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, don't forget your opportunity to qualify, your next opportunity. You only have 5 opportunities left. Today, tomorrow, all the way through Friday, the next 5 days, you can qualify for the Tickets European Vacation flyaway from Toledo Express by way of Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll tell you all about that and give you a chance to qualify. Once again, coming up between 4:20 and 4:30 on the program. But a couple of other quick notes. I mentioned Cam Newton's kind of, you know, can't call it a breakout game. The guy's been an MVP. His return to form, if you will, maybe, return to MVP form, because as we know, he took a giant step backwards last year. And Cam Newton, you know, the kind of question is he really still a top-shelf quarterback? Is he still a guy that they can build around and win a lot of games around, et cetera? And lo and behold, yesterday, he really, really had it. I think he took that showdown with Tom Brady very, very seriously and had a tremendous game. But I want to talk about another quarterback who did have a breakout game. Kush, I am a big, big fan of Marcus Mariota. Have been for a while.
Right, okay.
Thought that Marcus, and Marcus has, I mean, you know, really, really come on and developed big time now in his third season. But yesterday, he was outplayed, out, and of course he did not finish the game either, but out everything by the Wunderkind. Do you remember what Dabo Swinney, the head coach at Clemson, said to the Cleveland Browns? In about a month or so before the draft.
I don't remember the exact words, but it was something about regretting it.
He said, if you pass on Deshaun Watson, you're passing on Michael Jordan, is what he said. That's a pretty amazing thing when you think about it. That's a hell of a statement. You're passing on Michael Jordan, what the Portland Trailblazers did, what the Houston Rockets did, and even though the Rockets can say, yeah, but we got Akeem, okay, you did, but you passed on Michael Jordan. You don't want to pass on Michael Jordan. Yesterday, Deshaun Watson had the very first of what many people expect to be many, many Michael Jordan-type games in the National Football League. Deshaun Watson, the rookie first-rounder out of Clemson, 25 against Tennessee, 25 for 34, 283 yards, four touchdowns passing, one touchdown running. Accounted for five touchdowns. Jim, that's the kind of line you put up when you're quarterbacking Clemson against like an FBS school.
Mm-hmm.
Or an FCS school, I mean.
Yeah,
Wait a minute, which one is the big one?
FBS is big, yeah, FCS is small.
Yeah, it's like against an FCS school. That's I mean, five touchdowns accounted for, four on the ground, on the air, you know, one on the ground, a combined total of 300 and whatever yards of offense. Just an absolute quarterback rating of 125. He showed what Dabo Swinney was talking about. I was just, and I can't tell you how much I really like it. I just like the kid. I like his moxie. I like the fact that last week, in the middle of preparing for this game against Tennessee as his fledgling NFL career just barely underway, his third start as a Texan, instead of preparing for that, he's taking time out to write checks, or actually to donate his first game check to three women who work in the cafeteria at the Texans facility, whose homes and cars were destroyed by Hurricane Harvey and the subsequent flooding. This is a guy who's just a good guy. He's a good person, and he's a dynamic athlete, and he's becoming and is going to be one hell of a quarterback. And I just love seeing this story start to develop, Kush.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, yeah, I have the TV machine on here on one of the ESPN NFL shows, and the literal headline they're debating right now is Deshaun Watson already the best quarterback in the AFC South. And I'm kind of maybe leading there. And this is why, back on the draft, Bob, I felt a little bit better, and that's a separate story that I'm sure we'll go over parts with Scott Petrak. I felt a little better about, you know, them drafting Kaiser. And then you got the Toledo connection. But honestly, until that pick was made, I was steamed at the Browns that whole draft night going into day two, because once again, they didn't just take the obvious quarterback when they should have earlier in the draft. And as much as we like Kaiser and the whole Toledo connection, it looks like that whole thing is restarting yet again.
Yeah, and by the way, just to kind of make the Jordan comparison again, remember who the Blazers took instead of Michael Jordan?
Sam Bowie.
Sam Bowie, who was known best for what?
Being injured, really.
And who did the Cleveland Browns just take instead of Michael Jordan, Deshaun Watson? Miles Garrett, who hasn't played a game yet. Why?
Sprained ankle injuries.
Injuries. I'm not saying anything here. I'm just saying, you know?
No, I get you.
I'm not saying he's going to be Sam Bowie and never be able to have a career because he's constantly going to have foot and ankle problems. Not saying that. I'm just saying. 4 weeks into the season, 4 weeks into their careers, there's Michael Jordan doing his Michael Jordan-type things in Houston. And here is Miles Garrett doing Sam Bowie-type things in Cleveland.
Let me put you this way.
Sitting.
Yeah, let me put you this way, Bob. This is yet another one of those small examples of where I, as the Browns fan, have just had it with them. Let me put it to you this way. We're into our third season where I don't care the opponent. I don't care what game it is. I don't care when in the season it is. I pick against the Browns every single week. And I'm correct 28 out of 32 times.
That's right. It's been that much of a lock. Hey, all right, here we go. This is a lock also. The fact that we've got a Sports Center coming up here at the top of the hour. As we head into that top of the hour, though, what do you say we ring the phone lines? 866-240-1065. Caller number six right now. Caller number six. I got some of the good stuff for you. How about a $25 gift certificate to Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill? That's right. Caller number six right now. $25 gift certificate to Don Juan. Good luck to you from your friends right here at ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We'll talk about those clowns coming up next.
Wide open is Marvin Jones Jr., and he got behind the corner and all the way to the 38-yard line on the final play of the opening quarter. Lions knocking on the door at the 21-yard line. They lay it off for Darren Fells, already his fourth reception of this game. And it is Abdullah. Boy, he cuts on a dime And nearly broke that one where it got for Sendejo. 45, and Keenum is sacked all the way back at his own 45-yard line by Settle. First down, they give it to Dalvin Cook. And he puts the ball on the ground the first time he's fumbled it all year long. The Lions have it. Zach Center, a play fake it to him. And thrown and caught inside the 5-yard line. And that is a rookie tight end out of Toledo. Abdullah looking for a seam. And did he get into the end zone? It looked like he did. Rolling right, finding T.J. Jones. And that is a successful 2-point conversion try. But excellent field position from their own 44. Down the middle. And that is Thielen. And he loses the ball, and that'll be a turnover. And for all intents and purposes, that's the old ball game. And that ball punched out of there from behind by who else? The Pro Bowl safety, Glover Quinn. A 14-7 win for the Lions to go to 3-1, tied with Green Bay atop the NFC North.
I would not say it was bold. I would say that when you have pass rushers that you face like that, when you better be spend some time running the ball, because they can create some problems for you. So that was one of the things that we wanted to make certain we did, is to see if we can find some cracks in that defense. And it's a tough defense. I mean, they're very, very good in every single phase. I mean, their numbers indicate that. You know, our guys, you know, played extremely well, and our defense played pretty well today too. It's one game, but the guys play hard. We've been playing good defense, except for, you know, we had a little sort of a hiccup in the last ball game a little bit, but other than that, our guys have been hanging in there, doing a good job. But we've been taking the ball away. I think that's one of the things that made a tremendous difference there, that we were able to cause some havoc there with our guys, you know, knocking the ball loose, and that made a big difference in the game.
Tough NFC North battle, man. Our defense played outstanding. Our guys getting turnovers. Guys on our team doing a great job of not turning it over. I mean, I had a couple today that were close, and shoot, Zach going and jumping on that ball that was ended up being a fumble was a huge play. So just a lot of big plays that probably don't show up on the stat sheet.
We got beat pretty soundly in every phase. That's obvious. But like I told our team, you know, that's the first quarter of the season. That's not how we want to play or how we're going to continue to play. We understand we got some work to do. Nobody's going to drop their head or get mad. I mean, the only people that can fix this is the people in that room. We got work to do. We understand it. Give credit to Cincinnati. They played well, and we didn't. We got to continue to get better. We need to get better faster. The disappointing part is that was as bad as we played all year.
You know, in order to be successful in this league, once again, it takes all 11 guys on one side of the ball, you know, working together to execute their job properly, and we weren't able to do that all across the board from the first snap. We have a team who will continue to fight, and you can see that in that last drive there, and I wanted to be a part of that. It was best for me at the time to avoid some late hits at the end of that and try to preserve the, you know, health of myself moving forward.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed. Hour number two rolling along here. It's 4:13. Thanks for being with us. And just a quick reminder to state the obvious. We are engaging in our regular sports talk this afternoon with the sole express purpose of giving us opportunity, giving all of us an opportunity to get away from the tragedy, to get away from the horror, to get away from the sadness. I mean, it's one of the great things about sports. We always say this. I've been saying this for 20 years on the radio. This is one of the great escapes from the murders, wars, and rapes and things that we see on the front page every day. You know, we look at those things, we glance at those things. Sometimes we even talk about those things, but we really, really like to flip to the next section and get to the sports page where we find our relief and we find our respite from all of that. So having said that, prayers and condolences to obviously the victims who lost their lives in Las Vegas overnight last night outside the Mandalay Bay Hotel, and of course to the hundreds and hundreds of families of the wounded, injured people who are at hospitals, some of them still fighting for their lives. We go on and talk about sports as an escape from all of that, not to ignore it. So I just wanted to make sure that that is said. Coming up in probably less than 20 minutes, we are going to have another opportunity for you for the Tickets European Flyaway, the European vacation, if you will. So make sure that you are listening for the cue to call there. And joining us now is our good friend Scott Petrak, who covers a team that Jim and I have professed we are done watching. We just can't takes no more. If I can paraphrase Popeye for just a moment here, that's all I can stands because I can't stands no more. The Cleveland Browns remain winless. Hugh Jackson remains with a single victory now in 20 starts as head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and it doesn't look like things are getting better anytime soon. What an embarrassing 31-7 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. Scott Petrak, thanks for the time. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
Oh, man. You know, from a football standpoint, you look for times, Scott, over the course of the last, 16, 17, 18 years since the Browns have been back, and you can say this was the low point. That was the low point. I don't think you can do that anymore. There are just such a series of low points, and this, to me, is one of them. When you go against another winless team that looks just about as inept as you do in the Battle of Ohio, and you get them at home, and they wipe the floor with you 31-7, it's just one of those points where you say, we're supposed to see progress. Maybe not wins every week, but progress. And, Scott, when you don't see progress, it's another low point for me.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all, Bob. I mean, there's no way around it. It is a low point. And to me, it feels like we're approaching on a tipping point, too, for this regime and maybe this coaching staff. And we just got done grilling Hugh Jackson about it. He said a lot of the right things about the big picture and how Jimmy Haslam has been supportive as any owner who's ever been around and how he and Sashi are both working to win. But it feels like a win like that makes you question everything about the rebuild, everything about the people putting the roster together, and then everything about the coaching staff that has a team go out there and, like you said, gets destroyed at home to a winless team. So if it keeps up and keeps heading in this direction, then who knows what's going to happen with this organization.
You know, if somebody would have told me at the beginning of the season that Hugh Jackson might be on the hot seat within the season, I probably would have said you're stretching it a little bit. He's had 1 year, the least talented roster in the league last year, one of the youngest rosters in the league last year and this year. He needs time to build. But again, while nobody's expecting him to win 8 or 9 games and threaten for the playoffs, you want to look for something that says the rebuild. I think you put it very well, that the rebuild is something to believe in. Now you question the rebuild. You question whether or not Sashi Brown knows what the heck he's doing. You question whether or not Hugh knows what he is doing. You question whether there is a rebuild underway here or if this is just chaos and scrambling to find anything that remotely resembles a competitive NFL football team.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, I think if you talk to Sashi Brown, and it's been a while since we talked to him, he would say, hey, we always knew it was going to be a long-term thing and it would take years. And I understand that, but I don't think you necessarily have to lose sight of the big picture to also pay attention to the little picture and what's right in front of you, and that is that they're not competitive on a weekly basis. And there's no signs that are guaranteed that they're getting the big picture stuff right. Have they found their starting quarterback? And I actually think that Sean Kizer can be a franchise quarterback, but have they put talent around him? Are the decisions, are the 24 draft picks they've made in 2 years, can they count on any of these guys becoming future stars and future parts of, building blocks, right? The cornerstones of the rebuild. And that's what the whole rebuild's based upon. And I haven't seen enough to say, yes, they've identified any of these pieces. So you question it all, and then you compare them to other teams in the league in similar situations. Buffalo is stockpiling draft picks, and yet they're 3-1. With a new coach. L.A., the Rams, have a new coach, youngest coach in the league, and they're winning games with a young quarterback. So it can be done. You can win now and build toward the future, and it just feels like there's been way more emphasis on the future than the now, and that's why I get why fans are so frustrated.
So why is this team so unable to do what Buffalo is doing, what the Jets, who I think are also in rebuild mode, are doing, and they're 2-2. I think everybody who, and for some strange reason, by the way, the Browns are favorites by 1.5 against the Jets, who have won 2 in a row for this coming
year. Yeah, that's weird.
Which we can get into in a minute, maybe. But why is it? I mean, I want to say it on every level. I do. One of your colleagues, Rick Noland, who doesn't write about football, he writes about basketball, but he puts up there on Facebook today, I thought it was funny. He said, here's my analysis. Front office stinks. Coaching staff stinks. Offense stinks. Defense stinks. And special teams stink. And I jokingly said, boy, you just can't pay for a first-rate analysis like that, boy. But he's right, Scott. I feel like it stinks from the top all the way on down. And I don't understand how this is the only franchise out of 32 that can at least be competitive and win a game or two and do something to give the fans a moment of pride in the present while they build for that future. as you mentioned, that they, you know, seemingly forever look toward.
Right, and that's what owner Jimmy Haslam has to be wondering to himself, right? Why not here? Why everywhere else? You know, I think that's what he's searching for. I think he's searching for answers because he wants the stability. He said that a million times. He wants to believe these guys are the right guy. And part of that is because if he decides to blow this up again, I don't know where he turns, right? How do you get somebody else to come in here and run this organization? Where do you turn for a coach when everybody's been fired after 2 years or less and nobody's been able to figure it out? So I'm sure that Jimmy wants this plan to be right. He went out on a limb with these analytics guys. And to see no sign of progress for that, yes, we're going to win in 2018 or 2019, when that target seems to just be pushing farther and farther away, I'm sure Jimmy's questioning everything about his organization. For me, it starts with the roster. And you go into a Sunday, and I'm not sure there's a team the Browns will face this year where you go, you know what, the Browns have better talent. And the Jets might be the closest they come, which maybe is why they're favored. But it wasn't Cincinnati. It wasn't Indianapolis. And you go, okay, well, they shouldn't be favored to win, and we shouldn't expect them to win because they don't have as much talent as everyone else in the league. So I start with the front office. But then when you get blown out at home to a winless Cincinnati team, then the coaching staff must be involved in the blame. You can't just blame the roster. Right? Having less talent means you lose by 7, you lose by 10, you lose by 12. Losing by 24 at home and being down 31-0 means you also got out-coached and outwitted and out-schemed, and then that means everybody deserves the blame.
That's a very good point. You mentioned Scott Petrick as our guest, Browns beat writer. You mentioned how they kind of went out on a limb with the analytics thing. I'd say they fell off of it or it broke because, I mean, I jokingly said this before. Hey, I'm Jimmy Haslam, and I know how to fix my football team. I'm going to go hire a lawyer and a baseball scout to run my football program. And that's what they did because, well, the baseball scout is, you know, it crosses all sports. I mean, it's just analytics are analytics, and you can find the right formulas to figure out who's good and who isn't good. How about your eyes? You know, and then obviously Sashi Brown, a lawyer who had never been, to my knowledge, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, he had never so much as been a player personnel intern, let alone director or general manager, right. And we're going to give this lawyer full control of the roster as the director of football operations. How do you do that with either one of those things and then try to sell to the fans, this is going to work?
Right, I'm with you. And, right, I feel like maybe I'm casting aspersions on analytics because I don't think that's to blame. I think what's to blame is the guys making – the talent evaluation aren't qualified to make the talent evaluation.
But
isn't it because they don't have the back?
Aren't they using the analytics provided by DePodesta in helping to figure out what the talent decisions to make should be?
Yes. Well, I think there's an over-reliance on the analytics because they don't have your traditional football background and scouting background.
Gotcha. So it's both of those things.
Therefore, they can't trust their eyes. Yeah, correct. But I think if you had Peyton Manning, let's say, running the organization, he wanted to rely more heavily on analytics, that's fine because at least he can counter that with his own talent evaluation, or John Elway in Denver.
Right.
But these guys don't have that counter. So I think that's the issue. And, you know, he went out on that limb, and there's no reason to believe, and this is my biggest, I don't know, fear, but if you're a Browns fan, what I'd be worried about the most is they've had 24 draft picks in 2 years, and there's no reason to believe that they've gotten many of these picks right. Therefore, how do you trust them to make 5 picks in the first 2 rounds next year? And that's going to have to be forefront in Jimmy Haslam's mind. Let's say the season doesn't improve, right, and they go 2-14 or 1-15 or wherever they're going to go. If it's still a debate whether or not at the end of this year or even during the year, do I move on or stay in pat, it's going to be, do I trust these guys to make these draft picks? And nothing they've shown me in 2 years says yes.
Scott, it's not just the draft. First of all, you're right. I have no faith that whatsoever that they'll make the right decisions with the five picks in the first organization. I mean, this is a franchise that continues to give us Cam Irving and Justin Gilbert and Trent Richardson. And I know we're getting into previous front offices, but we're just talking right. about consistently over the course of the last few years. And Manziel and Whedon and on down the line we go. They continue to miss on all these can't-miss first-round picks, second-round picks. But it's more than that. Now we extend this into the free agency realm. Who in the living hell is Kenny Britt? And why did they give him $32 million when the man can't catch? I mean, I feel like if I toss him a loaf of bread from 5 feet away, it's going through his arms. It is impossible to be this bad while you're making this much money, unless, of course, the Cleveland Browns are the ones paying you.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because if you're going to target one position that makes you question this front office, it's the receiver position. Because they knew that Ray Farmer, the previous GM, had ignored it. So they sought out to rectify that and drafted four receivers in 2016.
Right.
And I'm not sure any of them are worth where they were drafted. Maybe Corey Coleman, but he's been hurt twice in 2 years. Hasn't been great when he's been healthy. Then they decided that they're still going to trust those guys going into year two. They want to see if they can develop. And the only significant receiver move they made was Kenny Britt to replace Terrell Pryor, who walked away in free agency. And if that's your decision, we're going to stand pat and replace Pryor with Britt, then it's ridiculous. And they're seeing that, and they're seeing how bad Kenny Britt is. And on top of that, they knew that they were going to have a rookie quarterback that was going to start significant games, and they're not supporting him enough. And if Deshaun Kizer's growth is stunted because they don't have quality receivers, then it's all on the front office.
You know, you're right about that, and which brings me to the Deshaun Kizer question, because if the front office isn't getting the receivers and they're stunted at that position, you're right, we can blame them, but the guy that has to suffer through it is the guy trying to find a way to make plays in the National Football League as a rookie. How do you grade, and I don't mean give me an ABCD, but in a general sense, how do you look at and evaluate, how should all of us look at and evaluate what Deshaun Kizer is, what he can be, based on the circumstances in which he finds himself, with the worst receiving core in football, with a very questionable bargain basement offensive line, with virtually no offensive identity or game plan? How do you break down what Deshaun Kizer is in four games?
It's way more difficult. It is. And I asked Deshaun that question today. You know, how do you tell if you're growing and developing?
Hey, Scott, I think we're losing you a little bit. Your phone, your voice just dropped off very, very low. Can you reposition yourself maybe?
Can you hear me now, Bob?
Again?
Can you hear me, Bob?
No, it's real low. We somehow, it dropped down several decibels. I don't know what happened there. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just a redial would work. I'll tell you what, Scott, hold on. Or go ahead and hang up, Scott. Jimmy, dial him back up, please. And let's get Scott back on the air. Just so I can, while he does that, I'll give you the line on Deshaun Kizer. 16 of 34 yesterday, 118. That's only 3.5 yards per attempt average. He threw a pick, no touchdowns, obviously sacked once. His quarterback rating was 43.5. On the season, Deshaun Kizer, most unfortunately, because I cannot blame him for all of this, he is now 73 of 142. That's only a 51% completion rate, which is obviously extraordinarily low for a starting quarterback. 764 yards, 3 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, so far a QB rating of 50.9. That's where he is. And again, to judge him by those numbers alone, either yesterday or through four games, is, I think, almost impossible. But that's the question we have put to Scott Petrak, who I'm told is back on the line. We'll try this again. Scott, can you hear us?
I can hear you, Bob.
Way better. Glad we did that. Okay. So you started to say it's a heck of a lot harder to evaluate this guy given those circumstances. Please continue.
Exactly. And I asked Deshaun that point blank today. How do you judge your own development given you're always in second and 25 and you're down 21-0 in the second quarter? And he said it's about the little things. For him, it's, am I protecting the ball? Am I doing a better job not taking sacks, not throwing interceptions, not fumbling in the pocket? And he said he made strides in that. Yesterday, the only turnover was the ball off of Kenny Britt's hands and then his shoulder. He only took one sack. And then Hugh Jackson said he thought he played his best game of the year so far. He missed a couple of read things that he should have identified and protected, but overall played his best game. But it makes it hard. And I get why fans think it's terrible, because the numbers are terrible, But when you break down a play, you go, you know what? That throw was where it needed to be. Or the only thing he's struggling with is a few throws are high and wide. When overall he's making good decisions, he's bouncing back after hits, he's not taking those sacks. So I think it's hard, and I think it's tough when you see a guy like Deshaun Watson have the success he has. But that's just what the Browns are having to live with. And I just feel bad for the kid who's taking a pounding and then is looking at himself at the bottom of the league stats in every category almost.
Yeah, and it's really, really unfair. And you know, he's the one guy, while I don't want to backtrack and undo what we said before about the Browns as a whole, while you build for the future, you better get some wins now. You know, everybody else is able to do that. Deshaun is a guy that I won't say you better get wins now, you want to see that progress toward getting wins. Because, again, there is so much of this that is out of his control. He is an individual that needs a whole bunch of really good teammates to show his individual skills. It's different than evaluating the entire franchise. I feel as though he could be as on point as ever. And admittedly, by the way, not every incompletion is the result of a drop. Sometimes it is a bad throw. Sometimes he is a half a step off. Sometimes he is not leading his guy just right. Sometimes leads him just a little too far on a sideline route in the first quarter yesterday, I recall. You know, so the accuracy has to be there. But I just feel as though this guy is going to get such a bad rap the way so many young quarterbacks do. I mean, not to compare him to Mike Glennon, but my point being that 4 games, you haven't produced Mike Glennon, you're gone, here comes Mitchell Trubisky. And he's a classmate of Deshaun's, obviously, in the first quarterback taken. But you understand the point that, you know, it's easy to get impatient with a young guy and replace him with the other guy. And I don't want that to happen to Deshaun because I just feel like this is really not his fault.
Yeah, I agree. And I've seen enough that I feel comfortable with moving forward with Deshaun. Not that that doesn't change as a guy plays 8, 16, 32 games. But what I've seen, I like. I think he's got the qualities you're looking for. And I do think you have to judge him differently than you judge a head coach who's been in the league before. This is a rookie, and it's a 21-year-old rookie. And he's being asked to kind of take the burden of a franchise that's lost forever. And that's unfair to him. So I think he does need to be graded differently. And you can't expect it. It's not Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers lifts up a franchise. You can't expect that from a kid who played a year and a half in college and then he's in the NFL at 21. But you look at those little progressions he needs to make, and as long as he's making those and he's got the right attitude and he's reading the defense and seeing the field better each week, then I think he can feel comfortable because he's got the skills. He's got the physical skills. I think he's smart enough. So I don't want to make any prejudgment on him, even though the numbers are as bad as they are.
I completely agree, and I'm so glad to hear you say that. Just to throw this out, only because I think you'll find it interesting. Oh, actually, you know what, Scott? Take that time out. Let me take a quick time out real quick because we got to do our contest we do every day at this time. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, a chance for you to fly away to one of 6 European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. Every weekday afternoon through the rest of this week, last chance to qualify is Friday. The drawing will be Monday, October 9th. You can qualify for this Ticket European vacation by being the 5th caller at 866-240-1065. You can also register one time only online at 1065theticket.com. From Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Caller 5, good luck to you. Okay, Scotty, I wanted to just throw this at you because I thought you might appreciate it. Do you remember what Dabo Swinney told the Cleveland Browns about a month before the draft? Dabo Swinney coaching.
Yeah, I do.
What did he say?
Yeah. Don't pass on him because you'd be passing on Michael Jordan.
I knew you would remember it. Cushling didn't remember it. You pass on him, it's passing on Michael Jordan. You saw what happened yesterday. Not that this is going to be his career forever, but I think we saw yesterday a Michael Jordan-style performance, one of what I believe will be many to come. 283 yards passing, 4 touchdowns in the air, 1 on the ground. It was a Michael Jordan-esque performance, despite our ongoing support for Deshaun Kizer that you and I just expressed. Do you think there is going to be a point where the Browns realize we got the wrong Deshaun? Spelled a little differently, but we got the wrong Deshaun. We should have gone ahead and taken this kid.
Well, I mean, again, it's premature, right? We've seen quarterbacks get off to great starts. We saw, I keep going back to RG3 just because how phenomenal he was as a rookie. And we all know how his career turned out. So
Rookie of the Year instead of Andrew Luck? People don't realize
that. So it's only been a couple games for Watson, but he was a big-time winner in college. I think he's got a lot of the skill set you need to succeed at this level. And there's no way the Browns can't be doubting that decision just after watching Deshaun Watson. But to me, it even goes bigger than that. It's, they didn't take Carson Wentz. They didn't trade up to get Mitch Trubisky. They passed, they traded the pick that winds up being Deshaun Watson, right? They gave that to Houston because they just kept delaying their quarterback decision. And even though they have Deshaun Kizer and Hugh Jackson loves him and thinks he can be the franchise quarterback, he could have been taken before they picked at 52, and then they would have had no logical answer at quarterback. And I think that's another flaw in this regime, is that they kept kicking the quarterback, you know, kicking the quarterback can down the road. And if they solve it with Deshaun Kizer, there's plenty of luck involved in that, because you don't wait to 52 and assume you're going to get a guy when you pass on other guys in front of him.
You know what's really more interesting, and I just had some fun with this before you came on the air, Scott, with us. Who did the Portland Trail Blazers pass over Michael Jordan to take?
Sam Bowie.
And what was Sam Bowie best known for?
Bad feet.
Yeah, being injured and never having a decent career because he was injured. And who did the Browns pass on Deshaun Watson to take?
A guy. Well, they wound up taking Jabril Peppers.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm talking about not taking Watson number one because they chose Myles Garrett.
Oh, Myles Garrett, yeah.
Who is 1 month into his NFL career and hasn't played a game because of injuries. And I'm not saying he's going to be Sam Bowie, but I just found it very, very weird. The one guy that the Blazers took over Jordan was a guy who never played because of injuries, and the Michael Jordan of football, as Dabo Swinney calls him, was passed over for a guy who hasn't played a down yet in the National Football League because of injuries. Just one of those goofy OIC things, I think. And, Scotty, with that, we'll let it go. Don't forget, anybody and everybody who wants Browns coverage as much as you can stand, and I say that not because of the website, Scott, but I can't stand it because my eyes hurt any time and every time I watch this wretched franchise continue to try to struggle for a win. But if you are following it and you want the up-to-date information, just tremendous wall-to-wall coverage at BrownsZone.com with Scott Petrak, BrownsZone.com. Make sure you check that out for all your Browns needs. Scotty, and with that, I say thanks so much, my friend.
Thanks, Bobby.
Good to talk to you, as always. All right, 4:36 now. So we did our contest, and did we get ourselves a winner? We did. It's Ben Meyer of Pemberville. That's our qualifier. Not a winner, but a qualifier for the grand prize drawing of the European Vacation Getaway. So you can try four more times at about around 4:20 to 4:30 the rest of this week, Tuesday through Friday, or you can also register one time at 1065theticket.com for that. Jim, we also had a winner that his name seems to have escaped my screen of the Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill prize as well. Did we have that one you wanted to announce?
We did have that winner, and
you gave it away.
I've already taken the prize sheet
Jesus
up.
Jesus, criminy cushion, you're killing me. You're killing me.
Sometimes I forget the little message thing does
cheese
that.
Cheese and rice, boy. we'll get that name and announce the winner for that one coming right back after we check our bottom of the hour local sports center coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
A lot of college football today on our Monday afternoon quarterback, Jim Cushlin, so I want to spend a little bit of time on that. By the way, congratulations. We did have that winner to the Don Juan $25 gift certificate. Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. It's Jeff Wilson of Lyons, Ohio. Jeff Wilson of Lyons, congratulations and thanks for calling. You did a great job. You won the tickets, or excuse me, you won the guest certificate. By the way, speaking of winning, something else for you. You know, the ticket is still ready to put $1,000 into your back pocket four times a day with the 4K a day. Listen, weekdays at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for a keyword. When you hear that keyword, text it to 62582. Text that keyword to 62582 at a chance or a four chance at $1,000 four times a day with the 4K a day only. From your friends here at Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. More information, by the way, on that contest is available at 106.5theticket.com. So, Cush, Buckeyes obviously no trouble at all, just rolling through Rutgers for the second time in 2 years. I think Rutgers got 2 points better this year than they were last year. Wasn't it 58-0 last year and 56 this time?
Yes.
Yeah, so congratulations to the Rutgers for their progress. The Wolverines, of course, had the day off, but yet it didn't stop them from making news. By the way, the Rockets also had the day off, bye week for the Rockets, and Bowling Green did play, but it didn't go the way, well, we had all hoped it would, as they lost their MAC opener to Akron to fall to 0-5 on the season. We'll hear from both Mike Jinks, the head coach at BG, and Jason Candle, head coach at UT, a little bit later on this week. But Michigan found a way to make news anyway. What's going on with the quarterback position. We know that in the offseason, there was a big battle for the starting quarterback job for Jim Harbaugh. It was between returning starter Wilton Spate, who gave, I think, enough reasons for questioning his hold on the starting job. I'm trying to say that gently. Not saying he played badly at all, but he, you know, it wasn't like he lit the world on fire last year in his first year as a starter. But it was enough to make Jim Harbaugh question that maybe fifth-year senior John O'Korn would be better off to guide the Wolverines this year, or young upstart Brandon Peters, a redshirt freshman. Those three guys were widely considered to be the candidates. True freshman Dylan McCaffrey was in line as a backup. He was never a serious consideration there, but he's going to be a stud, an absolute stud. Make no bones about that. But anyway, Wilton Spate won the job and has had it for the first few weeks of the season, but now he's going to miss what is just being said out of Michigan, Cush, as multiple weeks. Multiple could be two. That's a multiple. That's more than one.
Yep.
It could also be eight. We don't know what's going on. But he was injured against Purdue on September 23rd. Details of the injury not made public at all. They did have a bye week, as we mentioned, on Saturday. Harbaugh previously said if they did have a game, Spate would not have been able to play. And as it turns out, he is still not able to play. And that means when they take on, let's see, who do they have coming up on Saturday?
Sparty!
Oh, Sparty! For crying out loud, it's rivalry day. It's Michigan State against Sparty, excuse me, Michigan against Michigan State at the Big House. Then it's on the road for a pair against Indiana and number four-ranked Penn State. Then Rutgers, Minnesota, Maryland, Wisconsin, and, of course, Ohio State. So we don't know what multiple is, but, Cush, John O'Korn, the fifth-year senior, is taking over as the starter now. He took over in the first quarter against Purdue and went 18 of 26 for 270 yards, a touchdown, and a pick in that 28 to 10 win. And that, by the way, could be considered a come-from-behind win led by the Houston transfer, O'Korn, because they were trailing at, trailing 10-7 at halftime.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Wilton Spate out for multiple weeks, they're saying. I mean, we knew he got hurt, but, man, I didn't think it was going to be, well, we don't know exactly what it is in terms of time.
Because, right.
They're not just saying a week or two. They're saying multiple weeks, which leads me to believe it's going to be several.
Yeah, they're saying multiple weeks, but Jim Harbaugh and them are not being specific, and they're not even being specific about exactly what's injured. The biggest thing we know is in that Purdue game, he took a little bit of a nice hit to the back of the head, neck type of area, went to get some x-rays right after that game, and after that, that's pretty much all they publicly disclosed to a certain degree. So we don't exactly know the severity of this injury. We don't exactly know, as mentioned, how much he's going to be out. So that's the one side of it. The other is, I do find this interesting in the sense that now you have John O'Korn at quarterback for Michigan, and it's been kind of a debate all along. Should it be O'Korn? Should it have been Wilton Spate this whole time? This was an argument that went through camp. And the only thing I'm wondering out loud now is if it's multiple weeks, meaning I would think multiple games, so at least this one at Michigan State, and then the next week when Michigan is on the road at Penn State.
No. It's Michigan State, Indiana, then Penn State.
Oh, you're right. I'm looking at it wrong. I skipped over the little week. My bad.
Two in a row on the road, I should say. After Sparty at home, then it's on the road at IU and at Penn State.
My bad. Yeah, I read the wrong week as I'm glancing over. Point is, I'm wondering out loud, is this going to be one of those lose job even though you were injured kind of thing? You know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, generally they like, the athletes and coaches and all the sports like to say doesn't happen, but it totally happens.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you can't really blame, in my opinion, you can't really blame Jim Harbaugh for doing that if it happens, if they're winning with John O'Korn, because this is a fifth-year guy. You know, there's a fifth-year senior. He came over from Houston hoping to, you know, to be able to play and to make an impact. He lost the job. He was a good soldier about it by all accounts, and is willing to, you know, play his last year of football because he's probably not a pro candidate. Talking about John O'Korn, if he was, he'd probably be winning these jobs against the likes of Wilton Spate. So he didn't win the quarterback job. And so, you know, to me, if he takes over and they win, if they're beating the likes of Sparty and IU and Penn State, let's say that maybe Wilton Spate is healthy again just toward the end of October, say in the October 28th game against Rutgers. I don't know. If your goal is the playoffs, how do you go back? No disrespect to Wilton Spate, but how do you go back? If they're winning with O'Korn, and O'Korn has done all of the right things, he's been the good soldier, he never complained. If you take that away from him, especially, like I said, if he beats a Penn State. Penn State's the fourth-rated team in the country. Well, actually, the ratings came out again, rankings came out again yesterday, and I didn't really see them.
And so Penn State is still at number four.
They didn't change. Okay.
They did not change. Michigan's up to seven, by the way.
That's good to know, even though they didn't play.
Hey, we're in October, so the polls can sort of mean something now. We've had that discussion before.
That's right. That's right. Now they can, yeah. So Penn State is still fourth. If John O'Korn starts, and as long as he doesn't wet the bed and he's just carried to a victory, for example, by the defense, if John O'Korn starts and beats Penn State, I just don't see how you go back. You know what it kind of reminds me of? A little bit, kind of, sort of, maybe, is what happened with Ohio State and the whole Cardale Jones thing. You ride that hot hand. And you let him go. Even if you know, Braxton Miller or JT Barrett comes back healthy, Cardale Jones is winning the Big Ten championship game. Then he's winning the first playoff game. And then the national championship game, you wouldn't even think about going back. So if he beats IU and if he beats Penn State, well, first Sparty. If he beats Sparty and then IU and then Penn State, to me, he's your quarterback until there's a reason that he's no longer your quarterback. You don't just give it back to Spate because he gets healthy.
And I have to agree with that, because there still is the makings of Michigan being able to pull this off. I mean, you know, this division is tough with Penn State and Ohio State, of course, in it. But you need to put your best team out there week in, week out, regardless of the opponent. And if that means that's O'Korn at quarterback and not Spate, who, quite frankly, let's call a spade here. This is part of where this discussion and this topic right now is coming from. He's been inconsistent at best. So if you have O'Korn and he's getting the job done, yeah, I don't see how you go back to Spate when he's healthy again. And we don't know when that's going to be because, well, Jim Harbaugh's being very Jim Caldwell about this.
That's pretty good. Well, he was very Jim Harbaugh about this, if you recall, right up until the start of the season.
That's true. Yeah, that's
remember,
true.
He wasn't going to announce who was going to start against Florida until whoever it is trotted out to the huddle.
And I think only the rosters came out for the entire Michigan roster like 24 hours before that, too. So
that's
good point.
Right. That is exactly right. So so anyway, no, it's not surprising at all. I really think it would be the right thing to do. And by the way, the toughest teams obviously that they face in their half of the Big Ten are Sparty and Penn State and Ohio State.
Yep.
And you'll have two of them in the next three games. If he beats Sparty and Penn State, he doggone well better be able to get a chance to beat Penn. Talking about O'Korn now, better be able to beat Penn, or better be able to try to beat Ohio State at the end of the season as well.
Yeah,
that's just how I see it.
No,
like
and
said, unless he falls completely off a cliff and they're carried to victories by the defense or something of that nature. That's the way I would.
And I pretty much, you know, completely agree with that sentiment. I really do. Hey, I want to mention one real quick topic, if I may, Bob. I know we're going to talk a lot baseball things over the course of the week. So this will be the last time, really, until there's news of who moves in the offseason, i.e. hot stove, that I'm going to mention the Tigers, unfortunately, in any way, shape, or form. Remember, we were talking about this from the Browns angle, that baseball angle where it's reversed now. How about Pablo Sandoval and all the screw-ups he's had since going to Boston, that he's back with the Giants, right? He screws up by succeeding yesterday. Did you catch this? He ends the season for the Giants, who were horrible, of course, with a walk-off homer in the last day of the season. Because Pablo Sandoval did that, your Detroit Tigers, ladies and gentlemen, will be having the first pick in next June's Major League Baseball amateur draft. Even when Pablo Sandoval at 27 succeeds,
that's kinda awesome.
He's still screwing things up. So that's the one silver lining I can think of right now for all you Tigers fans out there who are just so thankful this is all over. He got the number one pick in next June's draft, and this team needs minor leaguers of all sorts, as we know.
Yeah,
I had to throw that out there before we left today.
Baseball, and I'm glad you did. That's a funny one to end on. Baseball, of course, much, much different when it comes to the amateur draft than basketball and certainly football, because the players are younger. Is it going to be the young high school phenom with a 98-mile-an-hour heater that may or may not, you know, be there long-term? Or is it going to be the more accomplished position player outfielder in the college ranks? It's a lot harder to project stardom for Major League Baseball's draft than it is for the other sports. So there may or may not be a huge difference between the first pick and the second pick, but at least now the Tigers will get to make that. Thank you, Pando Sandoval, the Panda Bear, if you will, for that little gift to the Tigers. That's pretty good stuff. All right, that is all the time that we got. Stay where you are because drive time is coming up next right here on The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow right here on The Extravaganza.